Everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Soccer Thread Podcast. I am not Dan Schrader. He is not here. I'm Mike Samuelson. I'm back. I feel like I haven't potted in like a month.
So it's good to be back.
Yeah. Can we cut in the Mace? Welcome back, Cotter. It's nice to have you back.
It's great to be back. That is Ryan Palmer. He's in Portland, Oregon.
I mean, shout out to the listeners. You are currently listening to America's 59th or better soccer podcast right now. So,
oh yeah,
that's
so
huge
hot.
News. Huge news.
Palmer, how do you know that? What kind of facts do you have to back up that statement?
State your sources.
I read it. I have the soccer thread Gmail that I have between you three. That's really how I know about this.
You found out from Dan. I'll tell you how Dan found it out. Dan was on Reddit, and there's some kind of I don't know how Reddit really works. Somebody posted a very comprehensive list of like soccer in America, and it was like, oh, these are the soccer websites where you can go read soccer blogs, and this is where you can go. I don't know. These are just different people who tweet about soccer, like whatever, Goff and Paul Carr or whatever.
Real people who tweet about soccer and talk about soccer.
Yeah, real people, yeah. Not just jabronis like us.
Professionals.
And then professionals, yeah. And then they're like, okay, here are the podcasts that talk about soccer in general. And we are on that list. And there's only 59 on that list. So therefore, we are at least the 59th best podcast, soccer podcast in America, according to Reddit.
Could not do it without the fans, so we appreciate you, fans.
Massive. Yeah. We're nothing without the fans.
Much as Boyz II Men back in the day created a song called Thank You to thank their fans, we may one day create a podcast where we're just saying thank you over
just
and over.
Just a listener appreciation.
Maybe we don't release a podcast to say thank you.
That was last week, yeah.
The listener appreciation, no podcast week. Here's an hour that you can use however you want it. You don't have to listen to this dumb podcast.
Listen to someone else. Get smarter. Yep. Come back. Teach us.
By the way, that's Colin Smith. He's in the Boston area, in the swamp.
I'm in the swamp. It's pretty swampy up here. We had our first nor'easter of the winter last night. Yesterday, really. No snow or anything. Just very cold rain and a lot of it. And, 40-mile-an-hour winds. So we're surviving, but we're bunkered in.
Word.
We've parked the bus. We've parked the bus inside the house.
Not going nowhere for the next 6 months.
Yep. Very conservative approach.
Very conservative. I love it. So no Dan, which means no draft, unfortunately. So if you came for the draft, try again next week. I think Dan will be back.
No Dan, no draft.
There's very simple rules to how this thing works, and a lot of it revolves around Dan. I briefly thought about drafting things about the pod that are worse when Dan is not here. But I just figured we don't have enough rounds to cover that, and it would just be too long.
Everything. So. I would take everything in the first round.
Yeah.
Wrap it up.
That'd be a fucking terrible draft. We did get one email. It's from Pedro. He does mention in his first email that he hasn't been listening to the pod. So appreciate that, Pedro. Appreciate your honesty and forthrightness. But he's awesome.
Teacher, I didn't do my homework. I just want to be real with you. I didn't do my homework. I watched this show last night. I'm wondering if I can turn it in tomorrow.
Yeah, the answer to that question is always yes. Thank you for the honesty. I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to read your paper until 4 weeks from later.
He is very excited that Phoenix FC is in the USL Western Conference Finals. We are lovers of the grassroots here on the Soccer Thread Podcast, so we're excited to get this little update. He's planning, it sounds like, to travel from Phoenix to Orange County, California to watch the game next week, which is lovely. Love a little bit of traveling supporters. Not always easy to do in the U.S. I think Phoenix to Orange County is like at least a 6-hour drive. So it's a nice little way. Wow, so great to see the support from young Pedro.
I like that.
Maybe on the 6-hour drive, he can spend an hour listening to the podcast. I don't know, Pedro.
I like the idea that Pedro's car, whatever car he takes in that 6-hour drive, that's going to be the official traveling support of Phoenix FC.
Yeah, it has like the the chalk on the back, like
all the way Orange to State. County Airbus.
Yeah. All the way to Nationals, USL National Champions.
Yeah.
And then it has all the players' names listed on the back of the car.
Oh, I love that.
Pedro, we're making fun of you right now, but really it's because we're jealous. We love your support for grassroots soccer and your dedication and commitment to it. I think people too often we like make fun of, and we're doing it right now, but people for supporting clubs that don't get a lot of support. But we are fully on board.
We need more fans like Pedro.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is 100% dope. And anyone who says it isn't is a jabroni, to quote my man Colin Smith. Pedro also very graciously invited me to the match, which is in California. Unfortunately, Pedro, I will be at a wedding on the East Coast next weekend when the game is, so I won't be able to join you, but I will be there in spirit. And I look forward to a little update from you about, you know, the road trip, the game, that we can read out on a future pod.
Yeah, that would be great. And up Phoenix FC. Let's see them. Let's make sure that they get a win here.
Up the Phoenix. I think Didier Drogba is still playing for Phoenix FC, which is incredible in a lot of ways.
Yeah. If they're losing, make sure you run on the pitch and make something happen so that we know what happened in this game.
Nah, don't do that,
little,
Pedro.
Get a little viral moment.
You're young. You have your whole life ahead of you. Don't screw it up by running on the field. Over to the Premier League. The slate of games this weekend. Probably the highlights were from this morning. We'll get to those in a little bit. But Liverpool played Cardiff yesterday. This was the only game that involved kind of one of the bigger teams, and they smashed him 4-1. Couple goals from Mane, couple goals from Salah. Colin, you very famously, as many things are famous on this podcast, predicted that once Kevin De Bruyne went out for City, that Liverpool would be favorites to win the Premier League. How are you feeling about that prediction right now?
They're in first. That's all I'm saying. They're in first. Mo Salah. So I'm feeling good about that prediction. First of all, and second of all, I was talking shit to some Liverpool supporters who I met this week, saying, Mo Salah, you know, he's not what he was last year. There's no way he's going to have 30 goals. And I think the narrative around the first quarter of this season has been like Mo Salah has been a little bit short of confidence or not as clinical in front of goal. Definitely turning the corner there this week. Mo Salah, I think he scored 2 goals in the Champions League midweek and then scored 1 goal in this game and set up 2 more, was the best player on the pitch, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the fact that Liverpool is top of the table without Mo Salah at his best, and now he is, I would say, at least for this week, back to the Mo Salah of last year, is a scary proposition for the rest of the league.
Yep. It definitely feels like he's clicking a lot more than he was just a few weeks ago. Liverpool definitely seem to be a team to be chasing. Although, you know, you said Liverpool's top of the league. City only 3 points back with a game in hand with the big game tomorrow against your Spurs, Ryan Palmer. So
yeah,
City's certainly in it still.
I mean, I think that Colin brings up a really good point in terms of Mo Salah. We talked about him earlier this year, maybe having a bit of a dip in form, and yet Liverpool were still able to kind of find other people to produce and in Firmino and Sané and Mane.
Daniel Sturridge wonder goals.
Sturridge wonder goals, right? Like, that is something that I think a lot of other teams don't have. Spurs in particular, like, if Harry Kane's not scoring, where does the scoring come from? I think Lucas Moura has started to kind of fill that shoe, and Lamella has as well. But, Liverpool is an insanely dangerous team. Mane can have or Mo Salah can have a dip in form, and anyone can step up. And, this Liverpool team is quite good.
Yeah, and it's just a completely different team. I feel like watching them is a different proposition than last year. Last year, they were, like you said, super dangerous going forward, but everyone knew they were leaky in the back, and famously in the Champions League final, we saw them be undone by that. It's not the case now. Alisson's been good in goal. Joe Gomez has really stepped up in the back line. Virgil van Dijk looks like, probably a Premier League best 11 center back. So they have strength from the back as well, which, you know, it's the opposite of last year. You never would have said that last year. Oh, yeah, Liverpool's back line looks strong. That you didn't say that against the worst clubs in the league. They still looked weak against Huddersfield Town or whatever. Now to say that they're strong back to front, that's why they can survive Mo Salah having a dip in form, because they can win games 1-0, 2-0, that they would have been drawing those games last year. It's why they're legit title contenders.
I mean, I think the biggest story out of this game is that they beat a team that was in the relegation zone for the first time. And who knows how many options. I think this was the seventh time that they've played a team in the relegation zone. And this was the first time that they were able to come away with 3 points. So that's for me, the biggest story and the biggest difference that in this Liverpool team is that they're able to do this week to week and step up for the, you know, relatively meaningless games.
Yeah, and I think the sign of a good team is not just winning those games, but scoring early. And they didn't quite put the game out of reach, you know, by halftime, but they got a goal in, I think, the 10th minute, which definitely helps to calm the nerves. So, yeah, I think we can all agree that Liverpool, much improved from last year. I still think City's going to win the title, but Liverpool definitely looking good so far. A couple other games around the Prem yesterday. Leicester tied 1-1 with West Ham, but really the story around this was that there was a helicopter crash outside the stadium. Palmer, you're the official thread communicator on events like this, so anything to add there?
I mean, the only thing that I know is that at the end of every game, the owner of the team, who I'm not going to try to pronounce his name because there's a lot of letters in it, he leaves the ground. The helicopter lands in the middle of the pitch, leaves the ground in this helicopter. Apparently this time the helicopter crashed in the car park. And that's about all I know, and that's all that we've really heard. We haven't heard about any injuries or who was on the helicopter or whatever, but boy, it's really sad. Rough day yesterday. Rough day all over the world. So hopefully this pod provides a little bit of joy for everybody, and you know, love each other and hold each other tight. I love you guys. This is the highlight of my
love
week.
You too, Palmer.
Every week.
Love you, Palmer. Love you too, Colin. A little more levity was provided in the Fulham Bournemouth game. Bournemouth won 3-0. I don't know if you guys noticed this or saw the highlights in the first goal, but the Bournemouth right back is like trying to go get wide, doesn't have the ball, and he just falls over. He just completely biffs it. And I really hope that somehow contributed to the first goal and that this was like a training ground, you know, play. They're like, all right, you pretend to go get wide and then fall over and then everyone will look at you and then we'll score. But Fulham is very bad at soccer. They are not looking good at all. They're 18th right now, 5 points out of 10 games, negative 17 goal differential. Tim Ream, proud American,
terrible.
Not looking great. Got run right by for, I think, the third goal yesterday. So Fulham looking
second
pretty bad.
He was involved on the second and third, I think.
Was he?
Yeah.
Bournemouth, on the other hand, looking great. They are in sixth right now. So I'd say, you know, we're going to do a quick quarter of the way through the season discussion later. And I think Bournemouth may be involved in that. Another team that's looking pretty good is Watford.
Can I get a shout on this Bournemouth game? You just did that one solo. You just went, I'm just going to tell you about the Bournemouth game.
I wanted to talk about Bournemouth, but please go ahead.
this is not even like a real point of soccer analysis, but one of my, you know, we love to talk about the little things in soccer that maybe rarely happen. And when they do, you kind of laugh, or that's a kind of fun thing, like the ball hitting the corner flag or whatever, stuff like that. On the first penalty, there was one of those for me, which is when a player hits a goal that goes so smoothly along the ground that when it hits the net, it just runs up the back of the net.
Yes.
And it ran. So this penalty runs up the back of the net and across the top of the net and then hits the crossbar from the other side. Yeah. It's just
this.
Like, just beautiful. It's like a perfect swish in basketball or something. I don't know, but obviously much more rare. But I just thought that was like the classiest way to to have this PK where you got, the keeper goes the wrong way and you just like run it up the net. I was like, just be like, this is just how easy it is for me. I'm just gonna roll this in and it's gonna hit the backside of the crossbar. Beautiful. Shout out to Callum Wilson for that.
If I were able to kick the ball hard at this point in my life, which I'm not, and if I were ever involved in a crossbar challenge, which I rarely am, that is how I would try to do it. I would just try to kick the ball as hard as I can on the grounds and it runs out the back of the goal and hits the crossbar.
Oh man, would that even work?
I'm counting it.
Is that part of the rules?
No rules. You just gotta hit the crossbar.
No rules in crossbar challenge, yeah.
So another team that's doing well, Watford, they easily dispatched of another team that's doing really poorly, Huddersfield Town, 3-0. I don't know, again, if you guys saw the highlights, but the first goal for Watford, dude just basically dribbled right down the middle of the field and didn't get challenged at all by Huddersfield. That looks like a team that is headed for the drop real, real quick. David Wagner, German-American coach who was getting a lot of love last year. I don't know, the dust has fallen off or something.
Was this dude that dribbled right down the middle of the pitch, was this Jerry D?
He had a goal
yesterday. Oh, okay.
Yeah, second goal. But yeah, obviously the Jerry D goal is exactly what you expect from Jerry D. He's on the wing. He goes past two guys with step overs and then roofs it. Yeah, of course. That's what Jerry D does. He takes people one-on-one on the wing and then he shoots because he's not a very good passer.
Yep.
Done.
That was a classic.
But yeah, Jerry D, I would love to have him on Everton still. Good player. What I want to say about David Wagner. Yeah, he's an American German coach. When Huddersfield are doing well and when they're doing poorly, he's a German American coach. I'm like, oh, that's a German. I mean, if he was American, he'd try harder. He'd have more grit, and they'd be fighting back against Watford.
Yeah,
but it's the German part of him. They just capitulate. You know, I don't know.
He's his gene pool is constantly changing based on his results.
Yeah, no, I agree. The Huddersfield days are numbered in the Premier League.
They're struggling.
They are really struggling. Don't know where the goals are going to come from kind of situation.
Yeah.
And also, they're such a small club that you can't really imagine them going out and spending in January the way you can with potentially Newcastle. Not that Mike Ashley will spend in January, but, you know, you'd think the money is there for Newcastle, or the revenue streams are there at least.
Yeah. Huddersfield have 4 goals in 10 games, which is, last time I checked, not very good.
Mm. It's good math.
It's better. Better than you, Mike. Better than you.
That's true. That's true. Other results from yesterday, Brighton Hove beat Wolves 1-0 and Saints and Newcastle tied 0-0. Anything to say about those, Palmer?
Colin got his perfect game. I'm sure he was happy to see that.
Yeah, got to have one of those a week. Ryan and the – I can't remember. Matt Ryan, was that his – no, that's a NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
Whatever, the keeper for Brighton, it was phenomenal in that Wolves game. Wolves were – we shouldn't take this as maybe Wolves aren't that good. They were maybe the better team in that game, at least deserved a draw, but keeper standing on his head in that one.
Yep. So probably the most exciting result of the weekend was a nice little 2-2 draw this morning. Crystal Palace going up a goal on a penalty, then get pegged back twice by Arsenal, and then get a late penalty again for Palace to make it 2-2. Palmer, I know you love seeing Arsenal drop some points.
I mean, of course I do, but they have been a scary team as of late. I think they had a goal against Leicester, I think, Monday of last week, I think, that was just an insanely beautiful goal.
Oh, God, yeah.
That was just the way that they moved the ball, how quickly it moved up the pitch. It was all one touch. And that's been the type and the style of football that, you know, I think that we've expected out of Arsenal.
And especially Mesut Ozil was brilliant in that game.
Right. And that has been kind of, you know, towards the end of Wenger's career, like where is this beautiful football that he promised us? And it seems to be back at Arsenal right now, which is scary for me because I hate seeing them above Tottenham, and I feel like Tottenham's moving in one direction and Arsenal's definitely moving in the opposite. So I'm happy to see them drop points here. I'm also happy to see them give up some late goals, which seems like Arsenal of old as of late. And hopefully they stop playing such beautiful football and Spurs can turn things around.
So I feel like Granit Xhaka was really the star of this game. And he had really the perfect Granit Xhaka game, which was an absolute thunderstruck free kick, just destroyed it upper 90. I think it might have gotten tipped by the keeper, but it goes in off the post. And then late in the game, for some reason he's playing left back, and he fouls Wilf Zaha.
They have two left back. They have two left backs injured.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean he's not a left back, I guess is my point. And he gets 1-on-1 with Wilf Zaha in the box, and Dooley gives up a penalty. So, you know, we know Granit Xhaka likes to do two things, which is kick people and kick the ball really hard, and he was able to do both.
He's just gonna kick stuff really hard. Ball, people, doors. Yeah. He doesn't care.
You put something in front of him, he's gonna kick it. You know,
he's gonna go UFC after his career is over.
Yeah, we're not saying professional athletes are smart. We're not saying they're stupid. We're just saying that they're well trained to do certain things. All right, and the other game this morning, Chelsea 4, Burnley 0. Chelsea just smash on Burnley. Chelsea,
no Eden Hazard in that game too, and they still scored 4 goals against Burnley at Burnley.
Colin, your boy Ross Barkley got the first assist, then he got a goal. He's been looking really good recently.
Yeah, 3 goals in 3 games for Barkley. A lot of people saying that he's, you know, his year, he essentially had about a year and a half that he kind of just like lost basically out of football and had some hamstring problems and was not getting games under Conte, and having Sarri in there has really refocused him and forced him to kind of evaluate the way he plays. And he's no longer, I would say, wanting to be the, you know, centerpiece of the team or playing like a luxury player. To compare him to Spurs players, he's no longer going to be an Eric Lamella who just kind of maybe floats around the pitch and gives you a couple moments of brilliance, but he wants to be, you know, a solid number 8. Can go both ways, and certainly he has always had the ability to do that. So a lot of people saying, you know, now he's 25 years old, he had this difficulty, but he's come through that.
Sometimes you have to come through it.
You got to come through that, and he's come through it with you know, increased effectiveness, I would say. The ability's always been there. I was going to say ability, but the ability's always been there. But certainly being more effective under Sarri. Also very helpful that the two guys in the midfield with him are Conte and Jorginho.
Yeah, I was going to say,
do so much work for him.
It helps that you have a kind of a supporting cast around you that is also very great. I don't think he has to be the stud. He was leaned on at Everton to be the man, I think, and maybe he just didn't have the talent or he didn't have the people around him to do that. But at Chelsea, he can kind of fade into the background a little bit and then pop up in important spots. And that's what he's been doing.
Yeah. I mean, I think basically the idea is at Everton, he was tasked with being the central playmaker, right? And he is still the central playmaker, I would say, in that Chelsea side, but their wings are so strong. Yeah. Obviously, Eden Hazard's maybe the best player in the league,
right?
But then even beyond him, you have Willian and Pedro, who are, you know, top level players that, you know, he did not have wings like that at Everton, and whatever, Kevin Morales or whoever was Aiden McGeady would be playing on the wing, right? So in that sense, he doesn't have to do such heavy lifting and attack, and I think that suits him much more.
Yeah, I have to say, I thought he'd be back at Everton in a year or two, just wouldn't get any playing time, and then, you know, would return home. But seems unlikely at this point.
Yeah, I think he is a player who you have to find the right role for him. And there were times at Everton, especially under Martinez, where, I think Martinez had the pulse really well on both Lukaku and Barkley, and were able to get the best out of them. Obviously, Martinez can't set up a side to defend, but he was really getting a lot out of those two players, who are both, you know, imperfect. And for other clubs, like Lukaku right now for United, you see their flaws. So, yeah.
So, speaking of Lukaku and United and Everton, they're playing right now, 0-0 in about the 5th minute.
Right, Everton's still not having conceded into the fifth minute.
The listeners will know by the time they're listening to this what happened there, and they'll be, you know, excited about Everton's 7-1 victory and Mourinho's impending firing. And then Palmer Spurs tomorrow against City. Palmer, how are you feeling about that one?
Just not the face.
Whatever, whatever you do, City, not the face. This is the money maker. That's
I mean, we're playing Mourinho's United, which obviously have been on quality.
They're a terrible team.
And I'm still feeling that way. I picked against Everton in streaks this week. I picked United, so not in the face is exactly how I'm feeling as well. I feel you, Palmer. I want to reach through this screen right now and give you a hug.
I would love that. You do love picking against Everton in streaks, though. I think that
I was like, that's a classic Colin Smith move right there.
That's the fan.
On my current streak, I picked in back-to-back weeks against Everton and then picked Everton the next week.
Insane. Yeah, so we're about a quarter of the way through the Premier League. Most teams have played 10 games. And, you know, we kind of wanted to just do a quick overview of where we're at. So if you haven't looked at the table recently, Liverpool's in first, Chelsea in second, a couple points back, City in third with the game in hand, Arsenal in fourth. And your Spurs, Palmer, are in fifth, but it's still fairly tight. You know, all five of those teams are within 5 points of one another. Spurs and City play each other tomorrow, so potential for a little bit of shifting. But any surprises there? Anything of note?
I think the biggest surprise is that we're having a season that isn't an absolute runaway like it was last year. I think by this point in the season, City had kind of just run away with the league already, and we were already crowning City as the champion. They were in the midst of whatever their win streak was, 15 in a row. And this year we're seeing a lot of congestion at the top of the table, which is fantastic viewing for everybody. So it makes the Man City Spurs game, you know, even a bigger game. Those 3 points are going to be huge, and it should make for a pretty fun second half or third quarter of the season.
Yeah, and all three of those top teams, Liverpool, Chelsea, and City, still have not lost at time of recording. You know, Spurs may have a thing or two to say about that tomorrow, but not just like City has been poor this year, but all three of those teams have been pretty good.
That's what I was going to say, is that last year, you know, United ended up in second place, right? And they were a team that, started the year pretty hot, but were not a team that you were like super impressed with during a lot of the year. This year, I feel like there are three and maybe more teams that are playing really, really well. It's not just that it's muddled at the top because no team is all that great or anything like that. Like no one's really clicking on all cylinders. There's three teams and also I would say Spurs and Arsenal right behind that look good. That these teams all look good and should be happy with the way they're playing, basically, I think.
Yeah, I've been impressed that Arsenal's done so well, frankly. I kind of expected them, you know, first season with a new manager to struggle a little bit out of the gates. But, you know, as Palmer said, they were coming off an 11-game winning streak in all competitions. Arsenal host Liverpool next week, so that should be a fun game. You know, a good test for them to see really how well they've come along. Obviously, not great for them to drop points to Palace. But yeah, that'll be a fun one. They've been a bit of a surprise to me.
Let me talk about Arsenal for 1 second. So the two things that with Arsenal that stand out to me are you talked about Ozil before and how good he's been, and maybe under Wenger wasn't getting the most out of him or for whatever reason. So he's back and playing at his best. But also, going into the season, I would have said there's a problem with Arsenal. They have two strikers who it's not sure who's going to play and who's really better. Neither of them are, a Harry Kane level striker. That's Lacazette and Aubameyang. And he's playing both of them. He's playing Aubameyang on the left wing, and Aubameyang's been cutting in and scoring a ton of goals from there. So this is a situation where I think the manager makes all the difference in the world. A lot of managers never would have tried that and just said, no, he's a striker. These two guys can compete for the one striker spot in my setup. I set up the team like a certain way, but Emery's ability to get a striker to basically play midfield and still contribute goals and not be a big hole and in the rest of like the buildup and things like that has been very impressive. I think that goes unnoticed, but it's very impressive to me.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. I think it's a bold, bold move, but it seems to be working out. So at the other end of the table, the bottom three right now are Fulham, Newcastle, and Huddersfield Town. Cardiff just out of that bottom three on goal differential. Frankly, all those teams are looking pretty, pretty poor. They've got two wins amongst four teams. Anyone else, either of you guys, who you think needs to be worried about the drop, or of those four, who do you think is the most likely to avoid the drop?
I think those four are going to be fighting the drop for the rest of the season. They are very, very bad. I'm a little shocked at how bad Newcastle is. I thought they would be a little bit better. Yep. And I do think that, like Colin was saying earlier, they have the revenue and they have the funds that they could go out and maybe kind of make a great escape attempt. But they're going to be battling relegation all year long. And I think that we just talked about the top of the table and the congestion and how great the football looks at the top of the table. The bottom of the table football looks really bad. And the thing about Premier League that's so fun is that you can watch kind of those relegation six pointers and get into them and enjoy them a little bit, especially towards the end of the season. But I'm afraid that it's going to be decided early and those relegation six pointers are going to be really hard on the eyes. So
The one that's interesting to me is Fulham, because I feel like if they change their manager, they could stay up. They have some talent. Shirla can score some goals.
Mitrovic.
Mitro obviously is, for me, one of the, I mean, he could start for a lot of clubs.
And he's kind of in the Premier League. He's still getting his too. Like, he's tearing the league apart. He's good for a goal a game, really.
He's a crazy man, though. I feel like he's the kind of person who, after you lose 3-0 to Bournemouth, he's probably just fucking punching people in the face.
Oh, yeah. There's no towel whipping in the locker room with him. He's definitely punching you. maybe putting soap bars in pillowcases and beating people. That's his style.
Yeah, you're painting a dark picture. I like it. But yeah, obviously they have talent there. They also have the guy with the French, Jean-Michel something in midfield, who's really good. But they're just so bad in the back. They're so poorly organized. They're like always giving the ball away and being 3-on-2, 2-on-1, like constantly 5, 6, yeah, 7 times a game. So it is the situation, I think, where we're saying Newcastle could turn it around by signing another player, because I think Rafa Benitez is safe in that job and he's obviously a top manager. But ooh, I think if Fulham got a different manager, then they could figure this shit out. They have the players to not be, their players are so much better than Huddersfield Town or, for me, Southampton. Like, they can score goals. That's the hard part. Just figure it out in the back. You can do that with Big Sam or whoever, and you can make a great escape.
Get a little pint full of wine in there.
Yeah.
Fulham have given up at least 3 goals in their last 4 games, and well, I don't disagree with you, Colin. I think, if you have a few more performances like that, you can just kind of lose a team and, things just go into a spiral. So they need to figure it out.
Yeah, but the De Boer debacle of last year, whatever that was, lost their first 6 or 8 without scoring a goal.
Oh, is this at Palace?
Yeah, Palace. Was that last year or 2 years ago? But anyway.
It was last year.
Yeah. That tells us that you can be awful, get a new manager in, and turn the ship around and play like a different team if the players are there.
Yeah, true. Anything in the mid-table to discuss at this point? Any surprises there or fun stories for either of you guys?
United is in the mid-table. That's fun for me.
Yeah, that is fun. Everton are well ahead of West Ham. George made a good move by not renewing our bet.
So we've talked about Fulham, we've talked about United briefly, which I think segues nicely into, first manager to go. Palmer, I know this is a favorite topic of yours. Are you still on the Mourinho train for this award?
I'm actually shocked that there hasn't been a manager fired yet. I feel like Premier League is really great at drumming up some narrative by firing a manager very early. And I, for my money, it was going to be Mourinho. And, we keep on saying, when is he going to go?
The antics.
Maybe during this pod at halftime.
Yeah, hopefully. The antics last week after he tried to, like, go full UFC and jump into the stands and fight people and things like that. Again, in Chelsea, holding up the three fingers saying, you know, I brought three championships here, but
I love that so much. And then,
midweek, and you see in the midweek, he they played Inter, right? No, who did they play?
No, they played Juventus.
Juve.
But then Juve fans are jeering him, and he did the same thing. He holds up three fingers, but it's because of the treble he won at Inter. Oh, saying, I want a treble in Serie A.
It's just like, at some point, you have to get over the antics. And
I will never get over the antics.
I love it. What statement is that? I think, no, for me, that it's hilarious. It's hilarious for us, the 59th best podcast in America, to come and just continue to give us content. It's great, and I appreciate that. But as an owner of a team...
Keep us in 59.
As an owner of a team, you got to get over it. I'm just shocked that he's still there. Like, it's getting a little ridiculous at this point, but...
Can you imagine if Mourinho had decided to retire after winning that treble at Inter? Like, he would have been like, this man is the greatest manager of all time, and now, 10 years later or whatever, he's the punchline on the 59th best podcast in America. I mean, it's really been a tough decade for him.
How the mighty have fallen.
There is an international break in a couple weeks, so pod
number 1100 where we're making fun of Pep Guardiola's antics after he's losing games at Watford.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is the question every week, right? And Mike mentioned that there's an international break coming up, so... we'll probably see some managers go out. And I bet that Mourinho doesn't go out. I bet he stays. I like Colin's suggestion that Fulham lose their manager early. That would make a lot of sense.
My theory on Mourinho is he wants to get fired. He's disenchanted with life at United. You know, it's not going the way he thought, and he just wants to get fired. He wants to get that parachute payment.
So. How to lose a manager in 10 days? Is this what we're...
Basically. 10 match days. All right. Anything else with the Premier League so far, Colin?
Biggest surprise, Bournemouth. I know you alluded to that previously, but shout out to them. They keep playing well. And same with Watford. I think both of those teams, you could have imagined going two different ways this year. And this is probably for both of them like a ceiling scenario. They're playing as well as you can possibly imagine them playing. And, you know, it wouldn't have shocked us to be talking about those teams in the relegation battle right now. But they're both looking comfortably better than Manchester United. So,
all right, here's a hot take. Bournemouth way overperformed this year. Let's say they finish in sixth or fifth or something.
Europa League. Somewhere in Europa League spots.
Yep. Mourinho fired at the end of the season. Eddie Howe named manager of United.
Wow.
It's plausible.
I thought you were going to say that Bournemouth's going to get relegated next year. So I was like, no. Palmer, so hot.
I think Eddie Howe likes it at Bournemouth. I think he's the kind of guy who just like, has been like, I'm going to stay in my lane. I've seen David Moyes step out of his lane and he's really fallen. And I can't remember.
If United come knocking,
it's gonna be hard to say.
It's tough to say. It's gonna be hard to say. I mean, I'm sure they would, you know, and increase his salary five times.
Yeah, all these top
tiny
guys
little stadium. They don't have revenue.
All these top guys back themselves so much, and so you know, I'm sure Eddie Howe feels like he could do a job somewhere else. So I think he would have to say yes.
It would be very interesting.
I like that hotness from you, Palmer.
Thank you.
That's what makes us number 59.
I'm coming to that 58. I'm coming.
So taking it back stateside for a little bit. Last weekend in MLS regular season play, a lot has been decided. A little still on the line. In the Eastern Conference, you know, I gotta say, even objectively, I think most people would say the top story in the Eastern Conference right now is your DC United coming from the bottom of the league, and now in fifth place. Wayne Rooney, new stadium, Lucho Acosta playing phenomenally well. This team looking very, very dangerous, I do have to say. Looking like we might have a little thread derby in the playoffs with Philly and DC going up against each other, so I'm excited about that.
Two teams that love each other.
Two teams that
you'd have to favor DC. You're right. You're absolutely right. You'd have to favor DC in that matchup.
They're looking great. You know, I could talk about DC all day, and I won't because
please
I think
don't.
Other
please
than
don't. Yeah.
Other than listener Scotty Pettis,
we'll get,
most people
we'll get
would
moved
not
down to 60th.
I think there's only 59 podcasts, which is why we're number 59.
Yeah, we'll just drop off the list.
They don't even make the list. Mike, how long does this last? Because I remember when Schweinsteiger came to Chicago, the stadium was packed. People were going wild. The Fire were winning games.
Well.
They were playing really well. They like were up at the top of the league for a minute. And then Schweinsteiger turns out he's old and he can't he can't carry a team, especially if they signed him to play center mid and he's playing center back. So how long does this last? When do we see the stadium stop filling? When do we see Wayne Rooney stop producing? How long are you going to ride this train?
I'm going to ride it for as long as possible is the answer to that. So I do have to hold my hand up. When we signed Rooney, I thought this was not a good signing. I thought, you know, this is a guy who's just coming for a paycheck and he's going to struggle in the DC heat and humidity and just not produce. And I've been completely wrong. So, you know, shout out to you, Wayne, for doing your thing. Like I said, you know, not only has he played really well, but he's got our other DP, Lucho Acosta, playing excellent. So I think as long as we can keep those two guys together and have, you know, a decent supporting cast, I don't see why this team can't be, you know, very good next year. We know with MLS that there's a lot of turnover year to year, a lot of changes. And frankly, I think, you know, Rooney's got at least another year in him. I think he's only 31 or 32. So he's not quite as old as Schweini. So, yeah, I think, you know.
He's 32. He's a little bit, yeah.
Wayne,
two more years of good times, and then, you know, back to the doldrums.
Wayne never did it for the paycheck. He did it for the love of the game.
That's exactly. I was going to say, I remember back. This is back in the beginning when we started the emailing as a thread. So this is like, what, 2012?
Yeah.
We did a list of our favorite clubs, or like rank the Premier League clubs, how much you like them, 1 to 20. And you guys were putting United at the bottom.
This is when
you're citing.
This is when our emails were like long.
This was in the grad school period of life for some of us.
And you guys were putting United at the bottom and saying, because I hate Wayne Rooney, like number one reason is like not number one reason isn't Ferguson. It's Rooney. I fucking hate Rooney. And I was the only one who said, well, I kind of like Rooney. I get that he's kind of a dick, or like he's really brash and, you know, he's a villain in some sense. But now DC is reaping the benefits of this like hyper competitive kind of guy who will fight for everything. I mean, obviously the amazing play he makes with the tackle and the crazy assist is like the pinnacle of that, but he does. He brings it every week. Every week he's been, I mean, yeah, he is. He doesn't have the legs he used to have, but every week he shows up to fucking fight for a club that
for a club that
like, why should he care? Like,
yeah, it's,
you know,
it's so true.
It's not like he's playing for Manchester United or his boyhood club Everton. You have every reason to think a person in that situation would come over here and play like Frank Lampard. And Frank Lampard had a lot of quality and scored a lot of goals, but he didn't look like he cared when he was playing for NYCFC. Rooney's the opposite of that. He looks like he really, really gives a shit about DC United.
I mean, I think the only two players that have done that have come over and really tried to, you know, they had success in Europe and they were in a big club, and every signing was, you know, you're coming over just to collect a big paycheck and you're not going to really work that hard. The only two that really have come over and actually played football is Wayne Rooney and David Villa.
Yeah. I mean, Villa loves, I think you're exactly right. Villa loves being the face of that club.
Yeah.
He loves being like the club legend there, or like the foundational piece there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's some guys that like Kaká, I think was all right. And you know,
Robbie Keane was very good. He's maybe not quite at that.
Robbie Keane scored a million.
Profile,
yeah. That's
true. He's very good. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Palmer, a lot.
Zlatan's certainly performing, but he's doing it for Zlatan, as he always does.
It's not like Zlatan's working hard.
No, I agree with you, though.
He's certainly not. Yeah, so the East is fairly wrapped up. Looking forward to a likely DC United-Philly first-round match. And, you know, maybe some Sox. Maybe some Sox to be bet on it. We'll see.
Oh, yeah.
I still owe Colin Sox, so I'm sorry.
I probably owe everyone Sox. In the Western Conference, only one spot available as well. LA Galaxy. Zlatan's LA Galaxy need a point, I believe, in their final game to qualify. So certainly, I'm sure the league is hoping for that because everyone wants to see Zlatan do some weird shit in the playoffs.
Yeah. Either goals or red cards.
Palmer, I know you've gotten pretty into, you know, your Portland Timbers recently.
No, don't do this to me.
No? Okay. We'll wait for Dan to come back.
I don't read during the week. I don't watch soccer right now. I got to figure my life out. This time change is really fucking with me.
All right. We'll just pretend that never happened.
I like how you can't get on, you can't follow MLS because the time change is too much.
Yeah, it's too hard.
Yeah, that's just good stuff. But yeah, last day of MLS, and then the playoffs begin. So, you know, an exciting time for US soccer fans for sure. Colin, do we have a classroom corner this week?
We do not. You did bury the story, the Tata Martino story, though. Can we talk about that for Classroom Corner?
Let's
going to do a roundtable discussion.
Sure. Do it. Yeah, wow. A little Socratic method. I like it.
I like this, yeah. Everyone circle up the desks.
Mike, tell me, who is Tata Martino?
Tata Martino is currently the head coach of
Atlanta
United. Thank
you for not asking me.
He's currently the head coach of Atlanta United. It seems
okay, thank
very,
you. That's
very
all
likely
I
that
Thanks.
He will be the head coach of the Mexican national team soon.
Yeah. Palmer, how do you feel about that? The best coach in MLS going to be the head coach of El Tri?
Can I ask you, does the U.S. men's national team have a head coach yet? Have they done that yet?
They do not.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So I think that's the comparison that we have to draw, is that Mexico, who was in the World Cup this year and lost their coach, now has a new coach already.
Well, he's not officially the coach.
Well,
hasn't been hired yet.
Okay, so Mexico's making moves to sign a coach.
Yeah, he'll be named as soon as Atlanta goes out of the playoffs.
Right, and yet the U.S. are still dragging their feet. So,
And
come on.
One of the, you know, this coach with a world-class pedigree coaching in MLS, clearly the, you know, best pedigree of any manager in MLS by mile.
Yep.
Taken out from under their noses by their biggest rivals.
Not taken out from under our noses. You would assume, like, saying taking out from under our noses would be like, we didn't see him and we didn't know about him and this was a surprise move. This was straight up just laziness and, and just kind of apathy on our part.
I mean, yeah, he came out, he said this week, I was never contacted by the U.S. men's national team about a position. Like, just talk to him. Like, it doesn't have to be a job interview, but somebody from U.S. soccer should go in there and be like, hey, man, you looking to leave? No? Yeah. All right, cool.
So the U.S., I mean, I'm not as pissed off that the U.S. doesn't have a coach as you guys are. What does piss me off, though, is that Ernie Stewart, who's the GM for the U.S. men's national team, came out and said, we are only going to look at coaches who speak English. And Tata's English is, you know, I think he understands, but he doesn't speak English very well. So the fact that you're not even considering coaches who don't speak English, I think is just ridiculous. I mean, Colin's boy Bielsa, not an English speaker, doing very well at Leeds. You know, it just doesn't make
Second
sense
in the
to me
championship
that,
right now
that you would limit your pool so much. I mean, they're already limit their pool to say, you know, we don't want to look at coaches who don't have experience in MLS or who don't, you know, understand the American player. Tata, you know, has both of those. And frankly, you can learn English. It is not something that you were born understanding. So
Translate exists.
Just makes no sense.
There are also English speakers on Atlanta United, and they seem to be doing just fine.
Yep. You can have translators. So
it's just shocking.
Yeah, it's not only the fact that he has the best pedigree of any coach in MLS, but also he's currently being very successful in MLS. Mm-hmm. Like, to not just you know, reach out on LinkedIn. I don't know, man. Figure
slide in the DMs.
See if you can get his number. See who you guys have in touch. You know, mutual friends on Facebook.
Have
I don't
him
know.
In your Instagram story or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost getting to a point where there's no job search that's happening. They're waiting for someone to reach out to them, and they just haven't had anyone.
They're
reach
waiting.
Out.
They're waiting for Berhalter to become available.
Yeah. It's. I mean, like I said, I'm not that pissed off that we don't have a coach right now. I mean, it would have been great, but I think the search process has not been very good, at least from, you know, what's been reported so far. So, you know, maybe we'll get a little curveball here and we'll get in somebody who's excellent, but I'm not optimistic.
How upset are you going to be
somebody excellent who speaks English
when, how upset are you going to be when Tata Martinez comes managing Mexico and they just slaughter us?
Stonk us
home and away
at home,
and
yeah,
and you know, the question is or the narrative is going to be, well, we could have had him, and
yeah,
you know, no one's talking about that right now.
I think that, and I think you're exactly right, I think that Mexico will beat up on us this coming cycle. Basically, they have a lot of players who are maybe a half generation older than our Pulisic and McKennie generation, Adams generation, like Lozano, who's playing just out of his mind right now.
Yeah.
They had two players who play for Porto, and both scored in the Champions League. Like, first time two Mexicans, you know, there's some record, right? So I think this is going to be a really, really tough 4 years for the U.S., at least in that matchup. I'm not saying we're not going to qualify for the next World Cup or anything, but we're going to be clearly behind Mexico for at least the next 4 years.
Yeah, but I mean, The U.S. has always been behind Mexico from a talent standpoint, so there's nothing new there.
Yeah, but not always from a results standpoint.
I want to go back to this English thing that's pissing me off even more now that the more I think about it. When we fell out of the World Cup, a lot of the talk was grassroots, and we're not building the game well enough at the grassroots, and the game has become kind of a white, privileged game because of the traveling and the politics that go into that.
And that's always been the narrative around U.S. soccer,
right,
but
right.
Yes.
And so, but it became more and more clear.
It hit home. Yeah.
Once we fell out of the World Cup and you know, the problem was kind of magnified. But for Ernie Stewart to say that I only want an English speaking coach, that again alienates a large portion of the American population of soccer players that are currently playing soccer at a young level, at a grassroots level, that guess what? They speak Spanish. And that is a language that is spoken in the US. So to say that, like, I only want an English speaking coach, again, alienates a population of a possible player pool that we're not going to be able to tap into because we only want an English speaking coach. So this pisses me off even more. Like, we're not learning our lessons.
I think that I can think about this two ways. It's really surprising to hear that from a guy like Ernie Stewart, who has spent so much time. He's a Dutch guy, basically Dutch American, and he spent so much time in Europe, where obviously many people speak many languages. And it's kind of not such a big deal to you know, maybe speak a different language or whatever. And I think that might be part of it, honestly, is that here in the U.S., if you speak English, you probably only speak English. Like, Greg Berhalter probably doesn't speak fluent Spanish, right? And so if you're asking for someone in Europe who speaks English, even if you're talking about the managers in La Liga, probably half of them speak English. Or the managers in Liga, probably half of them speak English, just because it's a very popular language to learn as a second or third language, and most people aren't monolingual. Whereas in the U.S., most people are monolingual, right? So if there's more like a dichotomy between having an either or, like an English speaker or a Spanish speaker.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the big issue here is that it's results that matter. And if you can get results and you don't speak English, that's what should matter. And so if you're not judging people on what matters, you're not going to make a good hire.
Yep.
That's, I think, what it comes down to. And I mean, I think there's reasons why you'd want all of your players and staff to be able to communicate in the same language. But at the end of the day, if you can figure it out and if you can win, then who cares?
So everyone knows what 3 points looks like, and everyone knows what a W looks like.
Yeah, so, Mourinho has shown us 2 points. It's a universal language.
Also looks like a W.
Also looks like a
all
W.
All right, that's it.
That was a hell class of a classroom quarter.
Class good. Dismissed. I know, it's, now we're all fired up. Recess is going to be wild as fuck. About to go out to recess and play some full contact soccer.
I'm going to play kickball. I'm going to kick that ball so hard. What to watch for? Probably Arsenal, Liverpool. I already mentioned that. I don't know if there's anything else going on this week. I don't think. No Champions League, I don't think.
Spurs City tomorrow. So.
Spurs City tomorrow. Yep.
Probably happening as you're listening to this.
Phoenix FC versus Orange County United or something.
Come on, you Phoenix.
Come on, you Phoenix. Beat those Real Housewives.
Man, I can't wait for Dan to be back in the pod. That's going to be great.
Miss you, Dan. Thank you, Cliff.
Miss you, Dan. Thanks, Cliff.
Miss you, Dan. Thanks, Cliff.
Hello, Cliff. I'm back, baby.
You're just like, what is you're gonna get eaten alive?
Woof, woof. You put something in front of him, he's gonna kick it.
Yeah, you're painting a dark picture. I like it.
The 59th best podcast in America.